podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavior Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by a returning guest, Jerry Barone. Jerry is the Chief Clinical Officer at Effective School Solutions, ESS. Jerry has experience in nonprofit organizations, social services, group therapy, clinical research, and crisis intervention. Effective School Solutions partners with school districts to help develop K-12 whole school mental health programs that incorporate mental health best practices and some very innovative clinical programs into the traditional school day, providing each student with comprehensive support tailored to meet their needs. Jerry, it's so nice to have you back. Welcome.
Thanks, Graham. Thanks for having me back. It's a pleasure.
Really nice to have you here. Hey, you know, today we're focusing on children's mental health and preparation for the fall semester that we are entering into. And as we start out, if you would remind us of your history and your evolution and the services you folks at ESS provide.
Sure, absolutely. ESS started about 12 years ago, and the idea behind it, we were running a therapeutic day school. So a therapeutic day school is a place where some students might end up going because they cannot really access their education because of mental health deficits. And it's gotten to the point where a higher intervention is needed. Mm-hmm. So an added district placement then kind of might take form. And I worked at a place called Cornerstone Day School. Yeah. And it was at Cornerstone that we started to look at the students that were traveling maybe 30 miles, 50 miles on a bus. These were kids that were already marginalized by the system. And as a result of their disability, mental health, we're talking about depression, anxiety, trauma. And as a result of that, we started to say, hey, I wonder if we provided these services in a school district, would we be able to, partner with districts and provide a high level of intervention so these students don't have to get on a bus. I mean, we weren't looking to put ourselves out of business, but we were simply following fair access to public education and least restrictive environment and saying, hey, wouldn't it be great if these services were available in a district so a student could still go to their own school, still take their own bus to school and be with their own friends, but receive comprehensive mental health care offset out of district placements. Well, that came to fruition that, initially two districts and back in 2009 were interested. Yeah. And from that point to now, we're in 90 school districts. We are in 9 states. We are probably in close to 130 to 140 schools because when we're in a district, we might be in multiple schools. So the idea really has taken form. And initially, we focused on, and we'll talk later about multi-tiered systems of support, but we really focused on the most comprehensive programming at the tier 3 level, because that's certainly a need for school districts. But over time, school districts and our partners have asked ESS, hey, can you provide some lower level, mild to moderate mental health support? The tier 2 level, and then we could talk at the tier 1 level. There's a lot of activity there at the tier 1 level in terms of, can you provide professional development to help us build capacity with our teachers and our leaders and our build trauma, DEI as well, and also putting knowledge and skills into the hands of our teachers so students are not going into the hallway or being sent to the principal's office for disciplinary issues or being sent to the counselor's office for counseling sessions. So, we've worked up and down that tier, and I think the pandemic, I see no real silver linings there, but I do think that it really has afforded school districts a pause and a watershed moment for this country, for school districts to look at what they're doing in their programs and saying, where are the gaps and where do I need to fill it in? Because so many kids are going to be struggling and have been struggling since the pandemic.
I love that idea, this watershed piece. We're going to come back and talk about some of the prevalence rates because it's so important for us to appreciate that. But I think this is mental health at its best, determining what the needs are, and then developing some resources and programs around that to meet the needs and going to where the need is. What a great history and evolution around that. I know too that your services, even this summer, have expanded just a wee bit, I understand, and you guys have grown a little bit here, huh?
Yeah, I think that there was federal money that was available to school districts for mental health services. They became available. And as a result of it, many school districts took a pause, looked at their support systems in place, started to think about what is it going to look like when students come back full time? What do my teachers need for self-care? Mm-hmm. What are my students going to need? What might I be seeing? And what kinds of specialty programs do I need to have in place to address some of the mental health issues? Again, sticking with the least restrictive environment, we're not encouraging school districts and mental health centers. We are saying that we're aware that you're working with students with mental health issues, and that since out of districts are so costly and emotionally costly to students and their families, that why not try to put some things in place to offset that? You're paying the bill anyway, one way or the other. So why not put those in place? And school districts are interested in best practice standards. And we're very excited about that because they're looking at, hey, we have programs, but I'm not sure if they're working correctly. Can you help us with that too?
Even before the pandemic, there was a growing mental health epidemic among our K-12 students. Give us a sense of the prevalence rates for the various disorders that were being seen before.
Yeah, I do think it's a good level set, Graham, to do that, you know, because we all know how we're feeling. But I also think, and I think you and I said this before, you mentioned that before the show started, laying out the prevalence that we've seen prior to and then what we've seen since the pandemic. So prior to pandemic, it was, you know, taken off. Prevalence for mental health issues among youth is 20%. Depression and mood disorders, a subgroup within that 20%, is about 11%. Behavior issues coming in at 10%. Anxiety, about 8%. But the thing that really stands out is that in the last 10 years, 12 to 25-year-old age group significantly has increased by over 50%.
Yeah,
and this is while, you know, mental health issues remain the same for other age groups. I mean, they're high, but they're remaining like flat, whereas this is taking off like a hockey stick, like the end of a hockey stick.
You bet. Yeah, that's pretty sad. Well, I know, too, that in our prior show, rather, we were talking about, you know, you identified mental health challenges as an epidemic in our country. And I said then, and I'll say it again right now, I think you're so right in framing it that way. So we know that there are some compounding effects secondary to the stressors of this COVID pandemic. Give us a sense of the prevalence rates now that you're seeing, Jerry.
Yeah, the CDC had, you know, a bunch of stuff that came out during the pandemic that pointed out that there was an increase of 40% of mental health issues among 18 to 24-year-olds. There was a 24% spike over the last year in emergency room visits for the 5 to 11-year-olds, with a 31% increase for 12 to 17. We stumbled upon an article recently, just came out August 9th, and it was pointed out that during the COVID-19 pandemic, depression, anxiety in youth doubled. And results from the analysis suggested that the pandemic is likely instigated a global mental health crisis. That is really, you know, amazing.
That's scary.
And the authors of the article also went on to say, but we know this is true working in the field. Mm-hmm. It's a critical time. And when mental health issues are not addressed, meaning the signs and symptoms, they only often get worse. So the student who is depressed and not sleeping, has some anhedonia, loss of interest, some guilty feelings, some appetite changes, if that is not addressed, that could turn into the student who is suicidal, having suicidal thoughts, cutting themselves and doing things like that. So it is a watershed moment. And there's no better place than to address mental health issues from our point of view than at school. I mean, it's not ideal, but it just, there's kids there. And teachers and leadership in schools for years, parents have relied on them to identify students. And we really lost that during the pandemic because you could not see students. And seeing students in a virtual world or a blended model world, whatever was being used, was certainly not the same. So good time for teachers to be getting back, putting their eyes and their ears on students again, and recognizing the signs and symptoms so we can address this pandemic. The pandemic I'm referring to is the mental health pandemic that we're dealing with.
You know, when you're talking about these mental health issues, and those numbers are truly staggering, when you understand that, you know, the other age groups, demographic groups, they're staying relatively, you know, flat in what they're doing. There's been some increase, we know, in anxiety, depression during this time. But to watch our youth go through these times with those numbers at those doubling in some areas, that is a very, very concerning area. And the thing you're suggesting here is these don't get better on their own. Some of these issues get a foothold in young people's lives, and it cascades into more and more significant issues in their lives, from the cutting to the withdrawal to the suicidal ideation, acting out, those types of things. These are things if we can catch early, and what better place to have them, like you're saying, in the school system. They're going to be there anyway, and they're going to be learning a number of things in their lives that are going to be important for them. And you're talking about how can we bring some of these best practices into the school system and weave it in, what we talked about before, seamlessly, and make it such a nice impact with these students as they're learning other things as well. I know as we're talking about the prevalence rates and COVID going back into school, pandemic of the mental health issues itself, in your crystal ball, do you have a sense of what we might be foreseeing in our future here?
I think we're going to be seeing lower levels, mild to moderate. I mean, there might be some, you know, hyperbolic things that we're seeing depending on what age group or developmental level we're speaking about. But I think in general, what we'll see is a higher level of anxiety and depression, and more in that mild to moderate category. So my suggestion to, and of course, school avoidance. Our suggestion to districts has been, you know, take a look at your professional development calendar and try to fit in capacity building initiatives that really are going to put skills into the hands and knowledge into the hands of your teaching staff, so you can address it at the classroom level, right? Creating these well-regulated classrooms as students get back is certainly going to pay dividends. And if you want to add coaching to that, ESS does coaching with its professional development model. That is even better. At the tier two level, where students are going to need counseling services, right? One is just like, hey, in the classroom, let's make them well-regulated. Let's try to help students become regulated. Let's not do things to trigger students. Let's do things that enhance the environment and keep kids in the class. At the tier two level might be those kids that are really showing signs and symptoms, right? They're showing that they're depressed. They're not coming to school. Their grades are dropping. School should be looking at, okay, what do we have in place to address bereavement, anger, some substance abuse issues that might come up, and short-term stays. So students could be in and out. You could treat a lot of students during the course of the year. And then, of course, specialty, and I mentioned that already, around school avoidance, I think will skyrocket, because I think even students that have never had school avoidance might have some parts of it right now. And in addition to that, students that had school avoidance, there's certainly a chance that this is going to really train.
You know, around the school avoidance piece, expand upon this a wee bit. I'm not, you know, everybody kind of gets the idea, but expand the significance and the reality about the school avoidance for a handful of students that are going to have a challenging time reintegrating back in. And what's kind of at some of the roots of this avoidance as you're seeing it?
So school avoidance is, we would put it in a class of anxiety disorders. You know, it could be stemming from, you know, depression as well, but those kind of go hand in hand. But we look at it within that family. Mm-hmm. And school avoidance, you want to look at the functionality of that behavior. Are they avoiding coming to school because of, you know, a negative affect, meaning that people are not going to respond to them in a good way? Was there a bullying incident? What usually triggers school avoidance is prolonged absence from school or a medical illness that the student has had. That usually triggers it. And schools should be prepared to address it early. You know, keep your eyes out for those kids that have not been in school for 2 or 3 days. The quicker you address school avoidance, the better it is. Professionals at the school should be willing to go to the home to try to encourage students to come to school, and they should have some robust interventions with parents to break an enabling cycle that might be going on between the parent and child. Bottom line is, you want to get them into school as soon as possible. You want them to have safe spaces once they get to school, so they don't necessarily have to go to class. Give them some room to kind of figure it out. And then eventually get them into classes. And you're practicing exposure therapy to try to get students to get closer and closer to getting to classes and assuming a full-time, you know, curriculum. But the truth is, if you don't address it, it's just going to get worse, and students are going to stay home and not come to school, and they're not going to be, you know, the successful adults that we are encouraging everyone to be. That's why they go to school.
We'll be right back after word from our sponsor.
Are you preparing for a licensure exam in psychology, social work, marriage and family therapy, counseling, or behavioral analysis? AATBS is here to help. We have been supporting behavioral mental health students to prepare for their licensure exams for more than 45 years, working with over 1 million students to succeed on test day and move on to the next step in their career. With products ranging from comprehensive courses to quiz banks and delivered live online, self-study online, and in print, AATBS has test prep solutions that meet every student's needs and learning styles. Visit us today at aatbs.com. That's aatbs.com, and use promo code BHT15 to save 15% off your next purchase.
You talk about how some aspects of this are in the realm of kind of some uncharted territory, but we can make educated assumptions about children and how they handle complex emotions. And like you're saying, experienced prolonged chronic stress, or say a wee bit more about school and the safe place that it is, but bringing our kids back in and kind of equipping them and joining them, coming alongside them to help them process some of these things.
Yeah, it's complicated, but it's not. I mean, students crave routine, structure, and safety, right? So three things that we've talked a lot about, three ways to support students and children as they come back to school, is make it a safe place, right? So we all need to feel safe. One way we can do this is through rules, procedures, policy, security. Make sure it's a secure place. You know, familiar routines and things like that, and rituals really are very, very important. And then I think in addition, you want to instill in them confidence. I have a lot of confidence that the mental health issues that we're looking at now can get better as long as everyone's working together. So I think for an individual in a classroom or a leader in a school or leadership within a district, you're conveying that, hey, we've gone out and we've done some things during this pandemic, filling mental health gaps for our kids and for our teaching staff. And those are going to work over time, and that where we want to keep it is in that classroom the best we can. And then if it finds its way out into the hallways, we have the proper mental health services in place at tier two and even at tier three levels. And if we need to send students to out-of-district placements, we will. But you want to instill confidence in your teaching staff that they can be in the classroom and instill that in the students that, hey, this is a safe place. You're going to get through it. We're all dealing with some anxiety coming back to school full time, but we're going to be successful this year. And believe that to be true.
I think that confidence that we as adults can convey to the kids, you know, kids, when they fall down, they get kind of busted up a little bit. The first thing they do is they look to the parent to see, are you going to freak out here or not? Because if you freak out, then there's something about my kind of busting myself up or falling down that must be significant. I'm going to cry. But if you say, hey, come over here, they kind of put the kid on their lap and kind of dust them off and kind of give them a little pat on the bottom and send them their way. The kid says, well, if you think it's okay, I can internalize this sense and I can metabolize it myself that I'm okay, even if I'm a little hurt. So you're talking about the confidence that we can instill as adults to say, hey, we got this and you're safe. Your task is to come to school. We've got some things in place. As we put those things in place with that understanding, I know that in terms of detection, children at different ages exhibit various behavioral and emotional reactions. Briefly give us a sense of what we might see within the different age groups, such that we might be able to identify some early warning signs, let's say of fears or excessive worry, anxiety possibly?
Last year when school was coming back and we had this fantasy that we were going to actually be able to do it, we had a very popular professional development presentation that we put together that was requested over and over again, and it was called Navigating Students Return to School. Nice. And one of the slides in there, we kind of laid out what are some of the fears, excessive worry, and anxiety that we might see with students at different age groups. So when schools design programming, obviously it has to be for development focus as well as age focus, right? So at the preschool level, some of the things that we would say is that students might have increased fear of being alone. They might have some bad dreams. This is maybe more for parents, but certainly, you know, they might have some bowel or bladder issues, changes in their appetite, which is classic, sort of a depressive symptom, and increased temper tantrums. But again, these are sort of normative considering, you know, what we've all gone through. And, you know, if it persists for a longer period of, let's say, 2 to 4 weeks, even with interventions, then you might need a higher level of intervention. But these are some of the things that you might see. At the middle school level, a school age 6 to 12, we'll say, some irritability, you know, changing, clinging, you know, that could be the school avoidance, not wanting to come into school, sleep and appetite disturbances, some physical symptoms, some withdrawal from their peers, and some forgetfulness about what they need to do at school and their chores at home. For adolescents, now, the one of the things that I didn't mention it before, but I talked about the JAMA article that just came out on August 9th, were two things that really stood out there that I loved, and because it focused on that young females were the ones that were having the most significant problems in terms of depression and anxiety, not that boys were not. But I thought that that's helpful because you are going to focus your attention in a school on something. It might be keeping an eye on the girls. And then it also focused on students that were older, high school age children. And that makes sense because I think they lost the most, you know, your high school year, especially if you were a senior, your junior year, or if you played sports. I mean, these were moments, you know, even if you're, you know, a thespian, you know, you missed opportunities to be on stage, right? Mm-hmm. So that makes sense. But if you are going to focus your attention, I mean, everywhere, but also focus it there as well. For adolescents, you know, the classic, you know, SIG-E caps, which is a mnemonic, which is, you know, look at sleep, interest level, you know, energy levels, concentration, appetite, changes with students or family members who's ever listening today, and then some lethargy, psychomotor retardation, they would call it. And then, of course, you know, that's suicidal thoughts. You know, that's when, you know, you really need to step on the gas and get them to a proper thing. So, you know, those are some of the symptoms that you might see for kids. And again, you want to have interventions at all levels of the system, and you want to keep it to the least restrictive. You know, if it could just be addressed in a classroom, that's why we love capacity building, then do it. I did want to mention this too. Districts have always been partners with us, and they're usually the ones that are giving us some really great ideas about what to do next. And we did have a district in the Delaware area, brilliant, Record Special Services. You do a psychoeducation series focused on self-care and critical skills for our teaching staff. We were like, wow, that is really out of the box thinking. We love that because the thinking of that individual was, hey, if you can't regulate your classroom, if you're not regulated yourself. And I think that she was thinking even beyond that, that she was seeing extremely stressed out teachers, either with their personal lives or combination of that and their professional lives, that needed the same kind of mental health interventions, not counseling, but a psychoeducation series on self-care, stress tolerance, emotion regulation, mindfulness techniques. So we've ended up doing that. I mean, it's taken off in so many districts. Now, when we speak to them about things that they might be doing, and we mentioned how about a self-care 10-part series that goes on for the entire year for your teachers, they're like, I'm all in. Yeah, that's a really, you know, and I know we kind of nerd out here a little bit when we get together, but I really, you know, and we enjoy putting that stuff together. I mean, we have it already in terms of our own thinking and our clinical work, but putting something together like that is just fabulous. And I think it's a great idea. You want regulated staff to be working with students.
Folks, pardon the interruption, but we'll continue this discussion on our next show. I want to thank our guest, Jerry Barone, for coming on our show today. For more information about Effective School Solutions and their services, please visit www.effectiveschoolsolutions.com. And lastly, I want to thank you, our listeners, for tuning in today. And we'll look forward to having you join us next time on Behavior Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Tribe Network, all rights reserved.